ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम फिफ्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 15 एंटाइटल द डिसेंडेंट्स ऑफ किंग प्रियव्रत। टेक्स्ट 2 ऑनवर्ड्स इट डजंट हैव अ पर्पोर्ट, so we'll read up till text 4. Translation of text 2. From Sumati, a son named Devatajit was born by the womb of his wife named Vruddhasena. Text 3. Thereafter, in the womb of Asuri, the wife of Devatajit, a son named Devadyumna was begotten. Devadyumna begot in the womb of his wife Dhenumati a son named Parameshthi. Parameshthi begot a son named Pratiha in the womb of his wife Suvarchala. And then this text 4, ya atmavidyam akhyaya swayam samshuddho mahapurusha anusasmara. You can repeat after me. Yaha, who, king and purport by his divine grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. King Pratiha personally propagated the principles of self-realization. In this way, not only was he purified, but he became a great devotee of the Supreme Person, Lord Vishnu, and directly realized him. Purport. The word anusasmara is very significant. God consciousness is not imaginary or concocted. The devotee who is pure and advanced realizes God as he is. Maharaj Pratiha did so, and due to his direct realization of Lord Vishnu, he propagated self-realization and became a preacher. A real preacher cannot be bogus. He must first of all realize Lord Vishnu as he is. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4:34, Upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshinah. One who has seen the truth can impart knowledge. The word tatvadarshi refers to one who has perfectly realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a person can become a guru and propound Vaishnava philosophy all over the world. The paragon of bona fide preachers and guru is King Pratiha. So the continuation of the family of Rishabdev is going on here, and it is explained in this particular verse that one of the descendants of Maharaj, this is descendants of King Prayavrat, but even before that, this is how the continuation went on from Maharaj Bharat is also described here. And one of them became a completely self-realized person and a preacher of the Bhagavad Dharma. Ya Atma Vidyam Akhyaya. Atmavidyam means the knowledge of the self. Now, in the Vedic scriptures, actually the Vedic scriptures, the process of understanding Vedic scripture is, it is deductive, or it is a descending process. Basically, any knowledge, if has to be received, there are two processes. One is the ascending, where a person, through his own analysis, through his senses, or through deduction, or in terms of anuman or speculation, guesswork, a person may try to understand the truth. And invariably, this process has its defects. This is the beginning, actually, of understanding. The first and foremost knowledge is to realize that I can't realize on my own. This is a great realization. We generally reach, you know, people conclude at the end of millions of lifetimes, Bahunam Janmanamante, that I can't do it and I need some help. So there are two kinds of knowledge, it is explained. One is paravidya and aparavidya. Aparavidya means knowledge of this material world, and paravidya means knowledge of spirit, individual and supreme spirit. Now, even paravidya, aparavidya, that is material knowledge, is perfectly described in the Vedic scriptures. One need not have to waste so much of precious human form of life in trying to do all this research. Simply, if we had access to this knowledge through proper system, descending system. But unfortunately, that's not available. Otherwise, and therefore, even without Vedic knowledge, today people are coming to the same realization, trying to exploit this material world for their own sense gratification. People have. It's not that the atomic bomb was not discovered earlier. They had. It was more subtler. Now it is more gross. Telecommunication, television, all this was there, but it was more subtle. There was a way of accessing all that. But now, very grossly the same thing has been utilized. So the one kind of knowledge is naturally in the process of thinking, you may come to these conclusions. That is called aparavidya. But that is artha and kama. Artha means how to acquire things, and kama, how to enjoy this world. That nobody need teach. Even the animals can do it. How to lord it over and how to enjoy. Artha and kama. But how to do it? Dharmo hi tesham adhiko visheshu. Dharme na hi na pashubhi saman. The nature of artha and kama, acquisition and enjoying, is such that it entangles us. How to acquire and how to enjoy without getting entangled? Dharmo hi tesham. How to do it? Ahara nidra bhaya maithunam cha. Samanyam etat pashubhir naranam. It's common. Eating, sleeping, mating. Self-preservation and race preservation. This is an inherent biological instinct of any living entity. It's natural. The animals do it. But that same ahara nidra bhaya maithun must be done in such a way that simultaneously self-realized. Yukta ahara viharasya, yukta karma sa cheshtasa, yukta swapnava bodhasya, yoga bhavati dukkha. Yukta ahara viharasya. One has to eat, one has to sleep, one has to mate, one has to defend. How to do it? Dharmo hi tesham. Through a proper way, by which, while maintaining the basic necessities, one achieves the ultimate goal of life. Dharme nahi na pashuvi saman. So that is the beginning. Dharma. So through dharma, artha, through artha, kama. But while doing, the difference between doing it through dharmic way is, if you do artha and kama through dharma, then naturally it leads us gradually to the point of moksha. Realizing that doesn't matter from abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartin Arjuna. From Brahma Loka down to this insignificant planet, insignificant or the lowest planetary system, Patala Loka, it's the same thing. Puna puna charvita charvanana. Something is more subtler, more sophisticated, another one is something very gross. And therefore, I am fed up of it. Now I want to get out of it. Now how to get out of it? Or what's the ultimate goal? However powerful, intelligent a person may be, but he cannot understand what's beyond this material creation. However powerful, it will be like a frog in the well, trying to speculate how big is the ocean. He can't understand. Because the nature of spirit is achintya. It is inconceivable to the human brain, to a person who has got a material body. That's why Mahabharata says, achintya ha khaluye bhava natams tarkena yojayet. Prakriti bhya param yaccha tad achintya se lakshanam. Achintya. The nature of the spiritual truth is achintya, inconceivable. Inconceivable means panthastu koti shatavat sarasam pragamyo vayorathapi manaso munipungavanam sopyasti yap prapadisimni avichintya tatve. Brahma explains, Lord Brahma, the first creator, the original created being within this cosmic manifestation, who heard the Vedas, immediately understood it, digested it, but couldn't realize the absolute truth till actually tene brahma hridaya adikavaye, the Lord revealed it. He says panthastu koti shata vatsara muni pungavana. Muni means one who is super intellectual gymnast. You know, gymnastic, Olympic gymnastics, it's amazing how they just go around and turn at any place like a rubber doll. Unimaginable by any other person. Here you have a low back problem, sitting down with a problem. And these people are so anywhere, bending everywhere, all these Russians. So you have this amazing gymnast. Similarly, that somebody does bodily gymnastics. But there are mental gymnasts, they are munis. They speculate so many things. Maybe like this, maybe like this, maybe like this. He says, Muni Pungavanam, the best of munis, for rest of eternity, with the speed of mind, if they speculate, so api, even if they speculate for thousands or crores of years, koti shata vatsara, even if they try to speculate, so api yat prapada. Pada means the feet. Prapada means the tip of the feet, the four forward part. Prapada simni, even the borderline of the toenails of the Lord, they can't reach. That means maximum they can reach to Brahma Jyoti. Not even Brahma Jyoti, the impersonal understanding they reach. They get fed up. They say, form, name, quality, activity, they see in this world, and ultimately they get disgusted and frustrated. He said, whatever should have no form, should have no quality, should have no, that's the only thing, impersonal. That's the ultimate that anyone with material conception can ever reach. That's all. So, achintya ha khaluye bhava natans tarkena yojet. By any powerful argument, you can't understand. So what is the way left?
It says, Prakriti bhya param yacha tad achintyasya lakshanam. It's beyond speculation. And therefore, it is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Maya mugdha jiver nahi swata Krishna gyan. Jivera kripai koila Krishna veda puran. Maya mugdha jiva. Once the spiritual spark comes in contact with material elements, then he is conditioned to think in a particular way. And in his conditioned state of thinking, he can't think of the inconceivable truth. Therefore, Maya mugdha jiver nahi swata Krishna gyan. What to speak of Krishna? He can't even understand the nature of the soul. Avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate. Krishna says in the Gita, avyaktoyam, it is unmanifest, achintyoyam, it's inconceivable. Ascharyavat pasyati kaschidenam. People hear about the soul as amazing, people think about the soul, but naveda kaschid. No one can understand the truth of the soul. People don't even know about the soul. What to speak of the super soul and what will happen after liberation. Therefore, the only way to understand dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yenagata sapantha, that the whole Vedic truth, of course, in Vedic truth there are so many types of knowledge. Aparavidya, Dhanurveda, this Veda, that Veda, Ayurveda. That's just to keep the body and mind fit, that's all. But then there is Traigunya Vishaya Veda, Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna, Nirdvandvo Nitya Sattvasto, Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. That if you want to rise above these three modes of material nature, then you have to hear the conclusion of the Vedic truths. The conclusion of the Vedic truths. Now, what is the Vedanta? Vedanta, anta means the end. That's called Vedanta. And that Vedanta is called Upanishad. Upa means near, ni means under, shat means to sit down. These Vedanta can only be understood at sitting at the feet of a self-realized spiritual master. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnanena tattvadarshina. Such tattvadarshis can actually reveal that truth. This is the only process. It's a fact. We have to hear from authorities, Mahajana. Unfortunately, actually if we see, even in this world, today we accept scientists as authorities. How many of us have ever seen, actually seen, the rocket going and landing on the moon? But just because it has been told that we have landed on the moon by scientists, and we accept them as authority, we just believe it. Textbook says the scientists have shown it, spoken it, and therefore we accept it. How many of us actually have confirmed it? Were we there standing when they actually just crossed over the atmosphere? No. But somehow, it's a fact. Yadyada acharati sreshtastha tadeve tarujana. Sayat pramanam kurute loka. It's the nature of this world. Whatever the leaders do, the common men follow. Authorities speak and people hear and accept. But the problem is, in this world, authorities speak and then later authorities come and to dismantle the whole thing and put another thing. And therefore people have lost faith. And therefore when it comes to Vedic truths, then we also feel the same thing is there, going to be there. But then the fact is, the Vedic truths are infallible. They are infallible. They have stood the test of time. And that must be understood only from an unbroken chain of discipling. Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu. This is the secret of understanding. And then, And how to understand this truth? Pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. Actually, this is the secret. You can't even demand to know the truth. You can't understand. You may have the best spiritual master, but unless we qualify, we can't understand this. The first is pranipatena, humility. And pariprashnena, inquisitiveness, inquiry to actually know the truth. And submissive inquiry. Inquiry not in terms of irrelevant, but relevant inquiries. And sevaya. Sevaya means after inquiring, after hearing, sincerely to the best of one's ability, put that knowledge to practice. Because when we put to practice, then some doubts arise. Then we go and clarify. Then again we practice. While practicing, some doubts arise. Then you go, clarify. This is the process of realizing. That's the word akhyatani. Idam atmavidyam akhyaya. Akhyaya means speaking with realization. Akhyatani hi adhitani. Speaking with realization is explained beautifully by Prabhupada in the first canto purport. He says, what is speaking with realization? Speaking with realization means a person who has, when a person speaks, he must speak with due respect to the acharyas. That is the first thing. He can't, out of vanity, speak, concoct something new one. It's not imaginary and concoction. He can't imagine something and he can't concoct something. So he speak with respect to the acharyas and without screwing out something, some other different meaning out of vanity, thinking that I know something. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, when Vallabha Bhatt approached and said that I have written something different from Sridhar Swami, I want you to hear. Mahaprabhu rejected. He said, I don't want to hear that. He said, one who is not faithful to the Swami, I don't want to listen. He's like a prostitute. Swami here meant Sridhar Swami. So if you are not faithful to the words of the acharyas, then we are unbonafide. And therefore, that connection is cut. The potency lies in repeating the words. That's the potency. The potency of the whole parampara. That's why before we speak, we chant the pranati mantras. That it's not simply a ritual, but it is acknowledging that everything that I speak is simply the digest, few remnants that is chewed already by the great acharyas. We are trying to chew that. Chewing the chewed. This is positive chewing the chewed. They have already digested and given their beautiful purports, the deep realizations of their heart, they speak. And a bit of that, a drop of that, we pick up and then, you know, try to understand that also. So, with respect to the acharyas, that's one thing. The next is thoroughly understand the subject matter. And after thoroughly understanding the subject matter, deeply deliberating upon it, speak according to time, place and circumstance in a suitable manner that the audience can appreciate. Shukadeva Goswami did not speak. He saw in the audience that there were many, many all kinds of mixed people. Therefore, he spoke. He did not speak about Srimati Radharani in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One of the reasons why he did not speak about Srimati Radharani. According to time, place, Srila Prabhupada, seeing the situation in the Western world, did not speak about high subject matter. He said, first you realize you are not the body. First you realize this. What is the use of talking high stuff? If we don't realize who we are, can't control our senses, So he gave exactly according to time, place and circumstance in a way that can be appreciated. And actually, the more we speak, real realization is to give that knowledge. The more we actually speak that knowledge, the more we realize. Speaking is for our own benefit. Sometimes we hesitate. People think, no, I am not self-realized. When I become self-realized, I'll start preaching. No. Whatever we know perfectly, perfectly means we have heard from proper sources, we can repeat. Actually, in the process of speaking, the Lord speaks. Many a time it has happened, many of the devotees, they start speaking and a question is asked. And because their sincere desire is to actually give the knowledge and connect them to Krishna, when an unheard question, they have never heard this question, suddenly a question arises. And in a prayerful mood, somehow you answer it. And later, you wonder, how I did answer this? Actually, you like the answer so much. So how did I speak it? People may appreciate and say, wow, Prabhuji, you are so that one. Because you know, I never thought about it myself. But on the spur of the moment, it was no desire to speculate. It's not an imaginary thing. But on the spur of the moment, somehow you spoke. And later, 2 days later, you read the same thing. It says, exactly this is what Prabhupada says. It's bona fide. How did it happen? Because of that sevaya, because of that reciprocation to do that service, the Lord inspires. And you can actually get convinced that it's not we, it's the Lord, Paramatma in the heart, he can inspire. And the whole process is, this inconceivable truth becomes conceivable by the mercy of the spiritual master. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasadam. This is the secret of spiritual knowledge. One can't barge into the kingdom of God simply by audaciously memorizing the Vedic scriptures and thinking that I can now, turn it around, twist it around and speak in a very eloquent way, in an impressive. Through these kind of things, one can impress the mind of the audience. But you can't pierce the heart or pierce the soul, give them the self-realization. It's only by the mercy. So that's what it is said. Idam ya atma vidyam akhyaya swayam samshuddho. To the extent we practice what we preach, that purity is the force behind those words. It's amazing. We may speak the same truth. We may speak the same sentence. But it may not have the required effect as Srila Prabhupada spoke. How was he able to convince? What was it? That is speaking with realization. To that extent, we have realized that knowledge, that conviction can actually touch. Because the truth is coming from the heart, it can penetrate the heart. If it is coming from the mind, it will titillate the mind. But it can penetrate the heart only when it comes from the heart. And heart knowledge, jnanam vijnana sahitam, that jnana will become vijnana or realized knowledge to the extent it is actually Hare Krishna. To the extent it is actually realized by sincere practice, sevaya. And then it's amazing how the inconceivable knowledge of the Lord and his reciprocation with the devotees can be easily understood. Sometimes we feel, the first time we come to Krishna consciousness, we feel, wow, it's so simple. And we start telling everyone else, thinking that he must become self-realized tomorrow. He should start chanting 16 rounds tomorrow. So simple. We are not the body, we are the soul. Krishna is God. We are part of Krishna. We have to get connected. The best connection is chant Hare Krishna. But then we realize that things don't happen like that. Then we realize actually it is a mercy.
that we have been able to understand. Otherwise, try to tell someone, today, on this most auspicious day, a little cowherd boy 93 kilometers southeast of Delhi, 5,000 years ago, on the little finger of his left hand, lifted a huge mountain. Effortlessly. For 7 days and 7 nights. Not that his eyes were bulging out, his veins were bulging out, he was perspiring. Effortlessly, smiling. And having fun. Long back, I read one Amar Chitrakatha. There also it says, actually what Krishna did, actually Krishna didn't live the Govardhan. No, not in that. In that it was at least shown like that. Another place, one person writes this book. He says, actually Krishna did not live the Govardhan. Okay. Doesn't make sense. What he did was, he called all the Brajavasis, put them in a mountain cave and covered it with a huge stone and held it like that. They can't understand. How can a person hold? So therefore, they try to bring down the inconceivable reality to our conceivable head and try to fit inside. It's just like you have a huge, suppose a piece of wood, and you have to put it in a small hole. You can't put it. So what do? Anything that does not fit in, you keep on scraping it off so that it just goes inside. You can't lift. Nobody can lift. Therefore, actually he did not lift. So what can a powerful person lift? A big stone. Actually he lifted a big stone. My own father's elder brother, big speculator, he wrote a book called Hanuma Ramayana. He did 12 years of research. He did wherever Lord Ram went. He went all those places. And ultimately his conclusion was that Lord Ram was originally from, you know, northeastern Europe. They were white people who came and conquered. And people in India were very black. So they look like monkeys. And therefore he called them all monkeys. And actually they did not have tail. He writes this. He used to proudly distribute these books to all my relatives. He says, actually they did not have tails. But they were very effective, very powerful people who lived in the forest and, you know, like Tarzan, threw the rope and go from one place. And they would always tie the rope around and let loose a little piece so that immediately it can be pulled out, accessible. So to these Europeans, northeastern Europeans, Aryans who came, these Dravidians look like monkeys and some were look like apes and bears, and they were so dexterous in moving from tree to tree that he actually called them monkeys. Actually, whole thing was Hanuman. Why he called his Hanuma Ramayana? Because Hanuman is the most important person. Hanuman was a very intelligent politician. And he saw, he was a good friend of Sugriva. And he saw, if he can somehow catch this smart guy, Ram, fair guy, and somehow make him, then he can conquer the whole India. And he says how he flew. Actually, he did not fly. He was expert swimmer. And when he was swimming, it looks as if half of his body was up on the water. It looks as if he was flying. Then what about Sanjeevani Parvat? He was so eager. He went to the mountain and collected so many herbs and literally ran with such speed. It looked as if he was flying with a mountain. In this way, he tries to bring down these truths. De-divinity. All the divine part, he wants to bring it down to the mundane level. This is how it happened. Or some people do interpretation. First, people don't accept it. It's all mythology. We are forced to believe that it is all mythology. Or the second thing is,
You use it and interpret and make it symbolic. Actually, what it means is, it didn't happen. But what it means is this. What it means is this. So, kill the whole damn thing. That's one way. Another way is, reduce it to our own level. Mundane. Make it mundane. So, it can't be realized. They can't understand how the Lord lifted this hill effortlessly, because He has inconceivable potency. The Lord does each and every act. He's called Bhuri Karma. One of His name is Bhuri Karma. Bhuri Karma means with one activity, He teaches hundreds of lessons. Hundreds of lessons. Indra was proud. He wanted to bring down his pride. The Brajavasis, he wanted to reciprocate. Intense reciprocation under one roof. He used that. So many purposes were achieved by the Lord simply by this one Govardhan Leela. And he wanted to show that Govardhan is non-different from him. Also, he wanted to reciprocate with Govardhan, who is Haridasa Varya, the best of the devotees who served Lord Krishna in so many wonderful ways. So the Lord reciprocated in an amazing way. Today is also the appearance of Rasikananda Prabhu. He was also very very powerful personality, very mystical person. One of the very mystical, just like Madhvacharya, very mystical person, eating, 3,000 bananas, very powerful wrestler. Rasikananda, there is a story, he was the disciple of Shamananda Prabhu, who was the disciple of Hriday Chaitanya. About Rasikananda, it is said, I remember I went to Mayapur, I heard Srila Jayapataka Swami Maharaj, very, very distinct, wonderful pastime about Rasikananda. First thing I saw on the board, Rasikananda, it just came to my mind. It was a very, mystical person. He had all this mystic power. One of them was he subdued the elephant. One crazy elephant. Mad elephant. Which was troubling this king. The whole kingdom. Where there was a Muslim ruler. Very cruel ruler. And when Rasikananda came to preach there, he was opposed. But Rasikananda, he went with full faith, just to, wherever he went, he would convert people. So, this king, he said, there is this mad elephant coming and troubling. He says, if you can subdue this mad elephant, then I'll accept he is a saintly fellow. And Rasikananda just went there, and this mad, right at that time, this mad elephant came and started destroying everything. Breaking down houses, throwing, everyone was running away. All the disciples who were with Rasikananda, they also just scattered. And Rasikananda just stood there and started walking towards the elephant. And this king was watching from his palace. Wild elephant, completely mad. And it was coming towards Rasikananda, and Rasikananda was just standing still. And everyone was breathless, watching what will happen. And this elephant came and started, loudly screaming. And Rasikananda just stood there. And he just became cool. The elephant also became very cool down. And Rasikananda actually told him, why are you causing trouble? You are not the body, you are the soul. Actually told him, you are a part of Krishna. You are Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and blissful. Why are you unnecessarily creating disturbance? You should chant the name of Krishna. Actually, somehow he could reciprocate directly, heart to heart. See, this is high level realization. Speaking from the heart, it could pierce the thick skin of the elephant and reach his heart. And the elephant had tears in his eyes. I bowed down and when he bowed down and offered obeisances, Rasikananda took his right ear and chanted the mantra, initiated him. After initiated him, he gave him the name, said, "Your name is Gopal Das." And with tears in his eyes, this elephant circumambulated Rasikananda Prabhu and then went. Another time they were lost in the jungle and he made wonderful arrangements for his Guru Maharaj and his godbrothers in the jungle and provided them nice food. One time this Rasikananda was in a village and he was sitting, and early morning he was just brushing his teeth with his neem stick. So, in that village, there was a very powerful mystic yogi who had come. He had the power, he could break the branch of a tree, sit on it, and just fly in the air. He was going all around the town. So, all the disciples of Rasikananda, many followers, they came and told Rasikananda, "Do you know, there's a powerful mystic yogi who has come, and he's sitting on this branch of a tree, and just, you know, traveling all around, just flying in the air." So Rasikananda said, "So? Now you should come and see." "Don't worry, that's not really important. Goal of life is not to fly in the air, just chant Hare Krishna. You know, Ashta Siddhi, all these things are there. Don't worry, this is insignificant material perfection. Don't worry about it." "The birds can fly without their endeavor. You don't watch them. Human being flies, it is a big thing. But birds fly is not a big thing." So, he says, "Don't worry." "No, but still these people were so impressed by that." No, you don't know. It's flying in the air. And it's not that. It's just any stick. He just pulls out a stick, branch, and he moves around. So, second time he said, "Don't worry, it's not really important. Most important thing is in this human form of life, not to get all these siddhis. Cheap siddhis, flying in the air, walking on the water, going under the carpet. Don't worry. Become humble." That's the real thing. Somebody becomes so humble that he feels himself under the carpet. That's more important. Of course, he didn't say this. So he tried to tell them. But somehow, they were too much overwhelmed by this kind of siddhi. So ultimately, Rasikananda Prabhu got so... He just wanted to give them a piece of how insignificant this thing is. So he was taking that neem stick, he just put it under his feet and he started going around in the air. That whole village, he was just going round and round three times like this. And then he came back, then he took it off, cleaned it, and then he started. He says, "Understand? Just go now and do your..." People were shocked. Rasikananda does it just like that. Not even a branch with that stick which he was actually brushing. Right at that particular spot where he demonstrated the insignificance of all this mystic power, there is a beautiful memorial created in Bengal. So that's the story of Rasikananda Prabhu. So in this way, actually pure devotional service is sweet reciprocation with the Lord. Today is also Bali Daityaraj Puja. How the Supreme Lord reciprocated with Bali Maharaj. It's such an amazing leela. Mahajano yena gatasya pantha. Another great Mahajan was Bali Maharaj. How the Lord sweetly reciprocated. By taking away everything. Practically everything of Bali Maharaj, Krishna took away. Just yesterday I was reading Bhishma Pitama leaving his body. Bhishma, just before leaving his body, he speaks a beautiful verse. He says, "Only the great devotees of the Lord who are relishing his glories can develop a sweet relation with him. Only such a person can actually remember the Lord at the time of death, who have experienced such taste. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that the Lord yasya anubhavam. Anubhava. Bhava means deep feeling for the Lord. One can develop only if there is a loving reciprocation. And Lord reciprocates with his devotees in such a inconceivable ways. And the more there is reciprocation, the more the love and intensity towards the Lord increases. One kind of reciprocation is the glory of the Lord. The more you know the glory of the Lord, the more we become attached. And the more we become attached to Him, the more we can intensely think Him, love Him. The more you love Him, you can't forget Him. Therefore, hearing these beautiful pastimes from those great realized souls makes our heart more attracted to these beautiful, sweet pastimes of the Lord. One way of glorification of the Lord is just to think how Lord is bound by Mother Yashoda. Can you imagine ordinary cowherd lady binding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the within whom is situated the whole cosmic manifestation? Simply a person who actually realizes this truth, what the Lord did, is overwhelmed with tears. Therefore, Satyavrata Muni says, he says, "My Lord, I don't even want what to speak of things of this world. Nachanyam vraneham vareshadapiha idam te vapurnatha gopala balam sadame manasya virastam kim anyai." It is simply this amazing pastime of the Lord being bound by the loving devotion of Mother Yashoda, by which he becomes subordinate to the Lord. A person can eternally go into ecstasy simply by remembering this one pastime. This shows it is not material activity. People get bored after listening to one activity again and again and again and again. It becomes boring. But Satyavrata Muni says, from end to end, I simply want to meditate. I don't even want liberation. But this memory of this particular pastime. This South Indian Brahmin who was in Srirangam, he went into ecstasy simply by seeing the top picture of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna has become the chariot driver of Arjun. We have seen this picture so many times. Why doesn't it put us into ecstasy? Because we don't understand the actual glory of the Lord. And we don't understand how that lovingly he has taken such a humble position. This man, he didn't know Bhagavad Gita, but because he had received the mercy of his spiritual master, he could realize the essence of the Gita, that Lord is bound by the devotion of his devotee. So this is one way the Lord becomes subordinate. The second thing he says, his name and pastimes are so sweet that the four Kumaras and Sukadeva Goswami, who were transcendentally situated, they became attracted to simply the pastimes of the Lord. They were not attracted to anything mundane. And thirdly, he says, another way the Lord reciprocates with his devotees is by putting them into tribulation. And Prabhupada explains beautifully how, by putting the devotee into tribulating, very troublesome situation, he puts them into ecstasy and increases their devotion. I've heard Kunti Maharani praying, Vipada Santu Sa Shashwat Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru. But the analysis Prabhupada makes in three sentences in that purport is amazing. He says, generally people are so much absorbed in material existence, which is made up of material relations. Material existence means people are absorbed in illusory material relations. Janasya mohoyam aham mameti. This is me and this is mine and this is my thing and this is my thing. This is my kingdom. This is my wife. This is my children. This is my kingdom. Whatever. People are absorbed in illusory material relationships. And he says, material relationships are based on material enjoyment. Why people are desperately seeking material relation? Because there is some material enjoyment. And material enjoyment, the foundation of material enjoyment is material resources. As long as a person has some material resources, he can provide material enjoyment, and therefore people come all around him to develop relationship with him. And this person thinks, these are my real people. They are my real well-wishers. They are my real kith and kin. So he's in an illusion, thinking, ah, these are all my own people. You know, my country, my people, my community, etc. So that material illusory relation is because he has material resource, because there is material enjoyment. And material enjoyment, as long as you can provide, you have to have material resources. Nobody wants to have a relation with someone who can't provide material enjoyment. At least a material relationship. You have to have some bodily beauty. Otherwise, why would anyone want to have a relation with you? Because you can provide some enjoyment. Or you have to have some power or some facility which you can get by developing a relationship. But Krishna mercifully, for his devotee, of course, he doesn't interfere with others. He lets them go into the vicious cycle of karma. But for his intimate devotee, when he sees that this person is really puffed up and he's going away, Krishna is so loving, so compassionate, he slaps him. But slaps him in such a nice way, he has no one to turn. He puts him in such a condition where he takes away all those material resources, which was the cause of material enjoyment and all the relationships. So all those relationships which were based on illusion, which was based on that, everything moves away. Then a person is absolutely forlorn, left. And at that time, he sees the world for what it is. He sees Maya Devi minus the mask. And then he appreciates the Lord for showing his loving reciprocation with him. He says, this is one kind of bhava, loving exchange that the Lord receives. Nobody can enjoy this. I mean, no, anyone else, if he hears, first time coming to a temple and hears this, that is the last time he will come to the temple. Krishna is also an expert person. He will not do it to any Tom, Dick and Harry. We are so careful, right? When a person comes new, we give them so much attention, love, care and all that. And once he becomes insider, people feel, jab pehli baar aaya, first time I came, so much attention. I wish I always remain a newcomer. But after some time, now you know everything. Theek hai. Keep quiet. So it's a fact that, you know, that love. But the Lord reciprocates. He knows whom to do this. In fact, in one purport, Prabhupada writes, in Bali Maharaj, this one, he said, Krishna did not have to come in the form of Vaman Dev to cheat Bali Maharaj. Even if he had come as four-handed Vishnu form and told Bali, I want everything directly, Bali would have given. Krishna knew Bali's heart. But at the same time, he wanted to tease him. He wanted to have some fun. At the same time, just like if you tell all the story of a movie before you go, there's no fun. He wanted to increase the excitement. The more the excitement, the more the enjoyment. So he wanted to create an excitement, come in the form of dwarf. What is a dwarf? He comes like this and assumes like this. So the smaller he came, the bigger he became, the more excitement would be there. So he assumed a little farm. And he came asking for smallest thing and took the biggest thing. So more excitement means, you know, smaller than the smallest, then bigger than the biggest. That gives excitement. Medium thing, nobody gives excitement. Something very small, something very big. So he came in that way and actually captured the heart of Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj was in such ecstasy. No one could understand. People criticized Vishnu, thinking that how can he do that? His own sister or daughter, some people say, Ratnamala. She was first attracted to this beautiful boy, but later she couldn't understand. She became so hateful. This fellow came and cheated. But Bali Maharaj was, he went into ecstasy. The Lord reciprocated. In fact, with tears in his eyes, he was glorifying the Lord. Thank you, my Lord. Because actually, what have you taken away? You have only taken away my false pride. Everything actually belongs to you. But in turn, you have given me such a wonderful position of Sutala Loka, where your own association I always get. So in this way, on these auspicious days, very soon we are going to hear this beautiful pastime. On this same very auspicious day, the Lord performed another beautiful pastime to put Indra, who was a nice devotee, but little puffed up. He just, in a such a nice way, removed his illusion and increased his ecstasy and brought him to, you know, a humble state. So these are the pastimes, and these pastimes can only be understood when we hear, and gradually by speaking about it we can eventually get purified, and then one can also realize him gradually, as it says here. He was hearing and speaking about it and realizing, thus he became purified and became a powerful preacher. So we'll stop here. If there are any questions or comments or clarifications. Is today fasting?
No.
Then I think we should stop. Otherwise, we could have feasted on this. But, of course, a big feast awaits afterwards. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Bol Giriraj Maharaj Govardhan ki jai.